here today with Mr. Ralph Morrissey. He is local to Pasadena, Texas, and he's going to be sharing with us his history and experience in data infrastructure. My question is, how do we get internet? How do we get cable? How do we get phone lines into our homes? Where does it come from? We'll get an explanation from Ralph's perspective today. Hi, Ralph. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, my pleasure, David. So where do you want me to start?
Let's start in the beginning.
Okay.
Let's just give your full history. We've already been talking for a while. So, Ralph, you can just take off where you think, and we'll go from there.
I was in college in 1965 working as a curb hop at Steak and Shake. And a family pulled in. I waited on him, and turns out the driver was a vice president of Southwestern Bell. And he just, when he was through, he handed me his card and said, if you're interested in a real job, a career, go down to the employment office and check it out. I did, and 60 years later, I'm still tinkering around in the business.
Wow. 1965.
Yeah.
Southwestern Bell. Are they still around, or are they
Well, that's the funny thing is, it's Southwestern Bell actually ended up buying out other Bell companies and eventually bought AT&T and changed its name to AT&T. So it's kind of like it made a full circle.
So the AT&T we know today is Bell.
Started Southwestern Bell that grew.
Okay.
And then changed its name. It changes to small AT&T as compared to the capital letters.
So then is your retirement and everything attached to AT&T?
Well, actually, that's funny there, too, because my retirement actually comes from Nokia. What happened is that AT&T split off from Southwestern Bell, I moved to AT&T. Then AT&T spun off its enterprise companies that manufactured equipment and stuff like that, and they named it Lucent Technologies, and AT&T focused on long distance only, that internet, long distance.
Okay.
Well, then Lucent Technologies spun off their enterprise division, just keeping their central office equipment manufacturing, and named it Avaya. Well, then Avaya got bought out by Nokia. So my check, if you will, each month comes from Nokia.
Wow. And Nokia, for those of you kids out there, used to be the cell phone back around 2000. Those were what everybody had. It wasn't iPhones. It wasn't Galaxy, whatever. It was Nokia phones, but now I don't even, do they even make equipment anymore?
Oh yeah, they still manufacture like data switches and things of that nature, and there's other stuff they're into.
Just not cell phones anymore.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's how I got into the business, and I remained a technician, and then up in St. Louis, and then finally the company said, you know what, they're really hurting in Houston for technicians. We need some volunteers to transfer to Houston, and you have until tomorrow to make up your mind. And so I went home and just yelled at my wife while she's in the kitchen. I said, hey, how would you like to move to Texas? She said, sure. And I said, okay. And I started filling out the paperwork. She came in and saw what I was doing. What are you doing? I said, well, we're moving to Texas. Well, that brought out a real serious conversation, but we decided to do it anyway.
Yeah.
Came down here, was a technician again. And then in 1984 is when AT&T split Southwestern Bell. And I decided to go with AT&T equipment side versus Southwestern Bell, the central office side. And then went into sales and marketing, and then finally went into business for myself.
Okay. So you say that there's a central office side and an equipment side.
Yeah, Western Electric used to manufacture all the Bell equipment, like that phone there. And there you go. And that's when I started my career. That's exactly what I was installing, those kinds of phones in residences. And eventually they came out with some color phones, which was really cool. But anyway, so I went ahead and I was working on those. And then 1969, they brought out Touchtone. That was a huge leap. Boy, that was great, you know. And anyway, as it evolved, finally we ended up with these phones here that work on the internet, voice over IP. And so that's where we are today technologically. And I've made it a point to keep up with all that. But none of this transition or consolidation or standards wouldn't have happened if it weren't for this. Because this is what standardized wiring in general. And because you could have a managed structured cabling system, you could have any technology you wanted. It could be analog, it could be digital, it could be data, and therefore it support any technology that as we evolved. This technology came out in the late 70s, early 80s, and once it was made standard, then everything happened. It's eight wires and eight pins, and everything we have out there works to that.
So this is a female.
Yeah, it's called an
RJ45
jack. And if you notice on the back of this phone, it has two of these same RJ45 jacks.
So then these are installed in the equipment, and then your Cat5 cable goes in, and the Cat5 can be any type of connection, any type of data or whatever?
Yeah, it could be data, it could be analog. We still have a lot of analog today. It doesn't care. It's it'll handle any technology like mm-hmm. that. And now what they do is they keep increasing that. That's Cat5e. They came out with Cat6. Cat5 originally could handle 100 megabit of speed or bandwidth at up to 100 meters. And then they came out with Cat5e, which is 300 megabit for 100 for a wire run that's 100 meters. And then they came out with Cat6, which was gigabit. Cat7 is supposed to handle 10 gigabit. Well, I mean, that's like fiber almost, you know? So, but it's still copper wire. And they just, by the way, they twist it, band it together, et cetera, they're able to make it handle
increase
higher
the amount
speeds.
Of data that it can hold
exactly.
and the distance that it can travel.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's go backwards from my house, for instance. Okay, I've got one of these things for, okay. We have, generally, all of us, we have Wi-Fi in our homes. That Wi-Fi is being generated, the signal anyway, from either you have a modem or a router connected to your modem
mm-hmm.
that's connected to wiring coming into your home with one of these and either the Cat5 or the Cat6 cables that he's talking about. And then that device, the modem, a lot of the modems now have, excuse me, have built-in Wi-Fi
mm-hmm.
or you have a router connected to your modem that then is generating the Wi-Fi signal. And then that Cat5 goes to the wall, or they have other devices there that they have to clean the signals.
Well, if it's being provided by AT&T,
mm-hmm.
all right, then you're looking at copper, and you're looking at this type of connection.
Mm-hmm.
If it turns out it's being provided by a cable company such as Comcast,
mm-hmm.
it'll come in on coax, which is a totally different wiring scheme.
I've got DirecTV in my house too, and it's coax to the satellite,
mm-hmm.
and then they've got a device that's coax in.
And so it just depends on what you're. But most businesses are using this, and they're using some form of copper and or fiber to make their connection.
And then if you have a cable connection in your home, that coax goes to the back of your modem.
Mm-hmm.
And provides the data into the modem, and then from there you have these to hook to your routers or whatever.
Yeah, it converts from coax into the standard copper.
Gotcha. And then so the information comes into the home, and then there's boxes in your backyard or whatever. So that's the last. Whatever you said, the line is 100 meters or 300 meters.
Mm-hmm.
So then there's a box. Generally, in one of the backyards of the place, or assuming it's a home or an apartment complex, that is like that last line to get to the mm-hmm. home from another box in the neighborhood.
Right. Or? What it is, usually about every 2 or 3 yards, they have what's called a pedestal. If we're talking AT&T copper,
okay.
a pedestal, and then the drop wires go from that pedestal to the back of the homes. And goes to a protector there for lightning protection, and then from there it's just hardwired to various locations in the house.
Okay.
And then that pedestal has a larger copper cable that goes to a what they call a main distribution panel that is in the neighborhood. And you had a picture of it earlier. that has all these connectors inside, and they place wire connections from wire coming from the central office to wire going to the pedestal behind your house. And that's very labor intensive, and it takes a lot of copper, and it doesn't stand up well in terms of weather and things of that nature. So it costs AT&T a lot of money to maintain that. That's why AT&T is going fiber throughout the area and as quickly as they can, because fiber doesn't deteriorate like that. It is very low maintenance because it uses technology, not a bunch of wires. And that glass fiber doesn't corrode it like copper does. And so it, in fact, the weird thing about copper is in these pedestals, they're usually filled with either fire ants or cockroaches. Somehow that light electrical charge in there draws them. I don't know what it is.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, that's a weird experience when you open one of those up. And
you need to be careful.
Yes, very much so.
How many homes does a single pedestal service?
It depends on the size cable, but a pedestal normally serve like two homes in back and two homes here, something mm-hmm. like that. And then they'll go down two more houses, drop another pedestal. Usually it's that. Now, that run may service a couple hundred homes, depending on the size of the cable.
From the main service.
Right. And now, just to put it all in perspective, you've got the home wired to the pedestal, to the main box here, and then the central office. And in the central office, that depends. That's changed over time. Back in these days, they had a bunch of analog switches, and it was a huge building, a multi-story building in many cases, depending on the size. And all these different switches that were used to move a call from point A to point B. Now they have what they call soft switches. When you lift up and get that dial tone, it's not something that goes up, clicks, and connects. It's all done by data on the backside. When you may be analog here, but by the time you get to the central office, there's something in the middle that's converted it to a fiber optic and to data packets. And in the central office, you've got the computer that gets a signal, gets that routing information on those front packets, and then sends it off in the right direction and rings your smartphone or whatever. So it's a completely different world now. And in fact, in this technology here, compared to this, you here required a building, maybe five in the city of Pasadena to service us. This, there might be a soft switch in Louisiana, a soft switch in Denver, and a soft switch in Phoenix that provides all the service that you get servicing all these people, because it's internet, it's data packets. It isn't one line, one connection per call. And so the investment to do voice over IP technology greatly is reduced compared to the old days.
Wow. So then the main service in a neighborhood or whatever is, what type of line? That's a copper line to that, or it's fiber?
Currently, it's copper most places, if you're using Comcast services, of course, it uses coax, but they're solely putting in fiber, and when they get fiber in, it's going to be fiber to the house, and then at that point, there will be like a router, modem type situation that will break it off into analog or keep it voice over IP, depends on you.
So then when we hear the marketing from, like, I know Google Fiber is a thing, and then you say that AT&T is moving to fiber,
mm-hmm.
it will be fiber from the, whatever the main source is, all the way to the main service in the neighborhood, and then fiber to the... All the way to the house.
Yeah, they'll still have, like, pedestals that where they'll bring the fiber down, and then they'll bring fiber in from the various homes and hook them together, and... provide the service to the house.
And the fiber is better than Cat 5, because once it gets to the house, then it's still Cat 5 to the...
Well, the fiber is better in terms of stability and the amount of resource you can get from that mm-hmm. versus copper. Plus, it just doesn't deteriorate like copper does. And once you get to the house, though, you don't end up with copper into the back of this. It at some point has to convert to this.
Basically to the modem.
Yeah. So you go to a modem and it's got these ports on the back of
right.
it. Okay. So fiber into the modem, these come out of it. And now you could use a patch cord to get to your phone. Mm-hmm. They can offer different technologies. Analog will slowly just go away. But
And this is considered analog.
Well, no, this can handle analog, this can handle digital, okay. This can handle data.
And you don't consider packets. This to be copper?
And this,
or copper can be this, but it's
it'll
mostly...
It'll still be copper from the modem to this, okay? That's in the
from
house. From the modem in your house.
Uh-huh.
You've got a modem and you got a router there. You still have those devices. And wiring from them to a hard line to your computer, whatever, it's still going to use copper. Unless you decide to go wireless in the house, then you don't need this.
But it's good enough for that last few feet.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Of whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. So then going and getting... Is it actual? Do they use Cat 5 to bring service to the main service, or is it a bigger cable?
Well, in the old days, they used large cables that had maybe 200 or 300 pairs of wires in it, and then they have terminals inside. Let me show you a picture that kind of give you an idea of what it looks like. Here's a better picture. This would be a typical panel that you might have where all those wires come in and are punched down. Okay, and then what you do is you place cross connections between the various ones so that you connect point A to point B. Like maybe this might be in a local building or something, and there's a business on the third floor, and one of those punchings represents the line going up to the third floor, and the other punching is coming from the central office. And so there I am making that connection. Yes,
but this was just a single time, though. You're not like one of those operators that's plugging it.
No.
Oh, let me connect you.
No, once you place that connection, they now have dial tone going to their suite.
I got you.
Well, they have something similar to this, but in a enclosure, a box, at various neighborhoods. And it's the same concept. But you can see how labor-intensive that technology is as compared to just having, you know, fiber all the way. And not having to have these kinds of connections in between.
No, because this is even an upgrade in the technology versus having the lady on the line and taking the cord and poking it in the hole and that kind of deal.
Well,
right?
Actually, to get from that switchboard to your house, there's something similar to this to make that final connection.
Okay? That's like the one that I showed you before. Is that what it was?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. So this, I've been through all this from here to here, and I'll tell you what, I love this.
Yeah. No, I get it. Let me ask you this. This kind of, we're talking about AI these days and this kind of thing.
Right.
Were there any pushback or people worried about implementing new technology? Excuse me. New technology. Were people afraid of any of this stuff as times were changing and the technology was being brought in?
Yeah, in fact, one of the funniest ones was back in the old days, you could call it technology, but the numbers used to be Hudson 74226, okay, or yeah.
Hudson, like as in the person's last name?
Yeah, or see, it's, well, that was so you the name of the central office, so you would dial Hudson H, U, and then 7, and so on,
okay?
Well, they decided, well, it's silly to have these names because they really represent digits anyway. H is 4, U is 8, so they just switch it to 487.
Okay.
Well, I actually got pushback on that because I went and stole the phone and I put 487 or whatever it was, and the man said, that's not my number. My number is HU7. And I said, well, and I tried to explain it to him, and he just had, so I had to get out this and then manually draw the letters on there.
Showing, okay.
Yeah, showing his number because he couldn't accept that change in technology. But yeah, a lot of people didn't want to pay the extra dollar a month that you had to pay for Touchtone. So they would rather have the rotary phone just for that purpose.
Wow. And, no, did anyone complain about possibly putting the phone operators out of business? Or taking away jobs?
I'm sure the operators did.
Yeah.
I think people pretty well accepted that. There's an actual training video on YouTube that explains going from the old style phone where you lift it up and the operator asks for the number to dial phones and goes through the process of letting you hear the dial tone and explaining how you take it all the way to the finger stop and everything. And I look at that now and I just laugh, but I remember when that came out, there were people who, they liked the convenience. Like, concierge service, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas now I have to pick up the phone and somebody's automatically there.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, that's crazy.
But as far as moving forward now, I mean, you know, we've got all these things now. People aren't nearly as resistant to these changes, and especially if it saves them money or saves them time, or it's cool. You know,
right.
It's a lot easier now. But yeah, there was a bit of a challenge back then.
Yeah. No, and something that has gone away also is long distance. It's not a thing anymore with our phones. In the beginning of the cell phones, again, for you kids out there, long distance was the thing. You had to keep track of how many minutes you spoke or how many text messages you sent and all this kind of stuff. But now with unlimited everything, it's just not a thing anymore.
And you don't even have to dial the digit one anymore for long distance.
Yeah. And then if you use WhatsApp or whatever for making calls, you can speak with somebody on the other side of the planet, and it's like you're talking to somebody across the street.
When my father traveled back in the 50s, when he would get somewhere he was going, he would call us, and he'd call person to person. That's where you get an operator on the phone and say, yeah, I'd like to make a person-to-person call, and he'd say his own name, and he'd give him our phone number. So whenever he called, we'd answer the phone and be the operator saying, I have a person-to-person call for Jerry Morrissey. And I'd say, well, he's not here. And the operator would say, well, sir, would you like to speak to someone else? And I'd hear my dad's voice say, no, that's okay. Thank you very much. Well, that was the signal. I arrived safely, and I'm not going to pay $3 for that call. That was a $3 phone call back in the 1950s. That's what, 30 bucks today? You know?
Wow.
And yeah, I know it was cheating, but those are desperate times when you have 10 kids, you know?
Yeah. No, I remember a commercial, Atta Baby, It's a Boy.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that commercial?
It's Atta Baby, Got a Boy.
Yeah. Yeah. That one.
And those were real stories,
yeah.
Actually.
No, it was different times.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. So, okay, we've followed the signal from the main service. So then where does this stuff come from? Where does the information, because there's information coming into our homes as
right.
well as us making calls and all of this kind of stuff. So where's the internet come from?
Well, and that really, I remember back in the 80s, late 80s, when they were trying to explain the internet, it was really a difficult thing to explain. Where, first off, it got its start with Bell Labs. Back in the 50s and 60s, Bell Labs were developing this, and then they gave it to Berkeley, I believe, and allowed them then to continue to work on it. But generally speaking, it was intended for government, and it was internal, like an intranet.
Right.
There was no World Wide Web. And so they were using it for internal communications. Of course, that was really secure, too. And then what happened is that they created a version of, well, I don't want to get into Unix and all that, but anyway, the way it works is that you've got a server. It could be in your house, actually, or mm-hmm. what have you. And it's issued an IP address.
Mm-hmm.
And the IP address identifies this location, plus you have a domain name server. You know, like Bob's Steakhouse,
www.thinkandactlocally.com.
And anyway, that converts, when you put that in there, that converts to an IP address.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, internally it'd be like 192.168.5.2, whatever, okay?
Yeah.
That tells that data packet, this is what I'm looking for. It's like dialing a phone number. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm looking for. I want to ring that phone. I want to get to that server. And so as these different servers are installed, that's your internet. You're looking for different servers. Now, there has to be somebody who handles that information. So you have other servers like AT&T and that make these physical connections, okay, to give you internet connection. And then also they take those data packets initially and say, oh, this is where it needs to go, and they send it out in the right direction. And that packet may hit a multitude of different servers and places till it gets where it's going, but it goes lickety-split. And so that's kind of what your internet is. And once you're connected to it and you have a domain name server then and an IP address, you're part of the internet.
So then the central office, does the central office still exist?
Yeah, there's still central offices for voice. But there isn't really a central office for the internet per se. it's different. You have a physical office where all this stuff has to tie together, of course.
And where people work and
yeah, things. People work and there's main servers that give you this connectivity to the internet. And anyway, so once you have that connectivity, you put in the right IP address or domain server name, www.ralphthephoneman.com.
Right.
Okay. Then you go to that location. If that hosted server accepts it, or you have your own server and your own domain, you know, you have to have a domain to be part of the internet as a server, or you have to have a domain name and use somebody else's domain. And I forget the name of the company that supports my domain or my website. Mm-hmm. But anyway,
all the hosting services.
Yeah, hosting services really, and that's kind of what AT&T is. It's kind of a hosting service and then some, because it provides the initial connection. Someone has to make that physical connection. Now, of course, these we can get on the World Wide Web through these, because we're going through cell towers and that's our connectivity there. It's not physical. Mm-hmm. But at some point it is. And at some point it's hitting fibers. You've heard about the Atlantic cables being damaged and things like that. There's still physical connectivities there.
We just don't see them because they're hidden.
Right. And all that is in background now. And it's, like I say, anybody can become an internet service provider, ISP. Anybody can become that. You just have, there's certain things you have to go through. There's regulating companies that issue you your domain names and stuff like that. You have to get that issued to you.
Okay. So we had started to wrap up, and then Ralph begins to give me the good stuff on the competition back in the day between the companies before the phone systems or whatever was like a nationalized service. They had Bell, whatever. I'll let him tell you.
Okay. Yeah, originally it was all Bell companies, and there were 23 of them. And in each of their territory, they had exclusivity. Now, there was another company called GTE that had some small areas, especially out in rural areas. But generally speaking, Bell companies had exclusive territorial use. And if you wanted a phone, you had to get it through them. It basically was a monopoly, but it was government authorized. Well, that meant that their rates were controlled, just like most electric companies are today. And so what happens is that whatever their expenses were, they were guaranteed a certain percentage profit on top of that. And each year they would take their expenses and show that they needed to get another raise because, you know, expenses are eating it up. So they really didn't care that much about expenses. In fact, much like government, when it came to the end of the year, we suddenly found ourselves working a lot more overtime, and it was frivolous overtime. And just like you hear about the government in September, it's like a garage sale, just buy anything, you know, whatever. That's kind of the way it was with the phone company until competition came in. And then all of a sudden, hey, wait a minute, we've got to watch our bottom line here because we're so overpriced, we're going to have to do something serious. And that's when they got serious about not only making sure that they ran their business like a business, but also in terms of innovation. We didn't have innovation until competition came along. Everything took 5 years to roll out. And all of a sudden, every 2 years, every 1 year, 6 months, we might see something new. So I tell you what, rolling out of competition, best thing ever happened to the phone company.
When was it deregulated and when was competition introduced?
Okay, deregulation happened in 19, for long distance, 1969, and then for phone companies in general, it was about the mid-70s. And that's when other companies could come into businesses and sell them an internal private business exchange, PBX system, for that business alone, and they would hook to the Southwestern Bell network. So this equipment here made by Western Electric would get replaced by equipment made, could be in the U.S., could be Japan, wherever. And that's what started forcing Southwestern Bell to tightening the belt and acting like a company, not a government entity, that just couldn't care less how much money they spent.
Okay. And so then they were selling basically to companies when they would set up a new building for the wiring and everything.
Yeah, it was automatically assumed that Southwestern Bell was going to come in, wire the building, rent the equipment. They didn't sell it. They rented it to them. so that it would be monthly payments.
Right.
And these other companies would come in and sell them the system, lease it for 5 years, and cut their costs in half. And then in 5 years, they owned it.
Wow. Okay.
Huge difference.
Yeah. Then anything else that you want to add to that?
I just that I think the competition is the best thing that could have happened to the consumer back then.
I agree. Monopoly granted by the biggest monopoly, the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, again, thanks, Ralph, for
you're welcome
talking with us, and we'll catch you guys next time.
All right. Thank you.